Weeks we've discussed the passage that was just read for us in John chapter 10, and we've talked about how that we have had conditional security. Yes, we are promised security, but it is conditional. Now, we want to move on to the next chapter of John, and we're going to be dealing with something that is a tremendous event as in the life of Jesus and those who observed what he did. We're talking about the raising of Lazarus from the dead. When Jesus began his public ministry, it was at a wedding. The last miracle that John records is after a funeral, raising Lazarus from the dead. This shows us that God in Jesus is present with us on occasions of joy as well as during events of great sadness. Both of these miracles involve family members and close friends. And so God must always be part of our lives. Jesus had a close attachment with this family that consisted of Mary and Martha and their brother Lazarus, not to be confused with the Lazarus who laid at the rich man's gate and was talked about in Luke chapter 16. This name is a fairly common name, and so this is a different Lazarus. In fact, it is the Greek form of the Hebrew Eleazar. And you may remember reading that several times in the Old Testament, particularly one of the sons of Aaron. And it means whom God helps, which would be entirely appropriate in this instance. Critics of the Bible like to... Well, they like to look at the Bible and say, this is just a book of myths and legends, and even though it is not told in that fashion at all. Mary and Martha and Lazarus are real people. They're not mythological heroes. They're just a good family. Bethany is a real place. It is on the east side of Jerusalem, about 2 miles away from there on the Mount of Olives. From here, Jesus would shortly make his triumphant entry into Jerusalem with people throwing palm branches and clothing before him. That's coming up before too long. But in fact, in honor of what happened here, Bethany was actually renamed for more than 1,900 years. It has been called El Lazare, meaning the place of Lazarus. That name for all these centuries has still been honored for what happened here, what we're about to study. Let's read John chapter 11, verses 1 through 4. And we're going to be reading through the entire text that we're dealing with today at some point. Now, a certain man was sick, Lazarus of Bethany, the town that Mary and her sister Martha. It was that Mary who anointed the Lord with fragrant oil and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was sick. Therefore, the sister sent to him, saying, Lord, behold, he whom you love is sick. When Jesus heard that, he said, this sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God may be glorified through it. So the two sisters had sent a messenger to Jesus to inform him that their brother was ill. Now, Jesus was about 25 miles away, and that was a 2-day journey a two-day time of travel. From the timeline in the text, we know that Lazarus died about the time the messengers arrived. Had Jesus left immediately, he could have not got there before Lazarus died unless he did a miracle to prevent that from happening. Now let's notice verses 5 and 6. Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he had heard that he was sick, he stayed two more days in the place where he was. Now that's kind of an interesting juxtaposition, isn't it? If he loved them, why didn't he leave immediately? Well, he did love them. And there's a reason why he did not leave immediately. So he gets the information, and he did love the family. There's no question about that. But he did wait two more days, and he did it for a specific reason, as has already been indicated, that God might be glorified. So he knew that he was dead. He knew that this death was going to be for the glory of God. And now he announces his intentions to the disciples. Let's read verses 7 through 15. Then after he said to the disciples, "Let us go to Judea again." Now remember, they had just left there not too long ago. The disciples said to him, "Rabbi, lately the Jews sought to stone you, and are you going there again?" Jesus answered, "Are there not 12 hours in the day? If anyone walks in the day, and he does not stumble because he sees the light of this world, but if one walks in the night, he stumbles because the light is not in him." These things he said, and after he said to them, "Our friend Lazarus sleeps, but I go that I may wake him." Then the disciples said, "Lord, if he sleeps, he will get well." However, Jesus spoke of his death, but they thought he was speaking about taking rest in sleep. Then Jesus said to them plainly, "Lazarus is dead. And I am glad for your sakes that I was not there, that you may believe. Nevertheless, let us go to him." So Jesus had left Jerusalem because they wanted to stone him. Remember, we just talked about that from John chapter 10, after he had healed the blind man, the man blind from birth. And then he had a conversation with some of them, and they were ready to stone him because in their minds, not actually, but in their minds, he had committed blasphemy. So they had left for a good reason. But now Jesus is suggesting returning, and they protested that. Jesus said, "I have to go there openly during the light, regardless of the consequences. I have work to perform." In essence, he's saying that. And that work is waking up their friend from the dead, Lazarus. Sometimes the apostles were incredibly dense. They did not understand that Jesus meant that Lazarus had died until he told them plainly. Jesus is happy that they were not there. Even his disciples, who had seen all manner of miracles, would be impressed that Jesus raised a man from the dead who had been dead for days. Now let's read verses 16 through 19. Thomas, who is called Didymus, said to his fellow disciples, "Let us also go, that we may die with him." So when Jesus came, he found that he had already been in the tomb 4 days. Now Bethany was near Jerusalem, about 2 miles away. And many of the Jews had joined the women around Martha and Mary to comfort them concerning their brother. So Thomas makes a statement. It's interesting. It may be a statement of courage. It may be a statement of faith. He had no expectation but what they would kill Jesus and them also. So it's kind of a statement of faith to say, let us go. But Jesus was their Lord, and they needed to follow him no matter what it meant. So it may be faith, it may be courage. Maybe it's a little bit fatalistic. Well, we may as well go and die with him. When they arrive, friends are comforting the two sisters. So let's go ahead with verses 20 through 22. Then Martha, as soon as she heard Jesus was coming, went and met him. But Mary was sitting in the house. Then Martha said to Jesus, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now, I know that whatever you ask of God, God will give you. Certainly, that's a statement of faith. Martha came out to meet him. She knew who Jesus was, and that if he had been present, he could have healed Lazarus from his sickness, and therefore he would not have died. I don't believe that she is making a complaint any more than her sister Mary will when she comes out a little bit later and says the exact same words. It does not seem to be a complaint so much as it is an accurate observation. Oh, if you'd have just been here, he would not have died. She knew that he would be raised up at the last day. It was not all that long ago that perhaps she was among those who heard Jesus say, or if not, she heard it some other time, in John chapter 5, verses 28 and 29, these words. Do not marvel at this, for the hour is coming in which all who are in the graves will hear his voice and come forth. Those who have done good to the resurrection of life, and those who have done evil to the resurrection of condemnation. Now, whether she was there on that occasion or not, she knew those words because Jesus taught the same messages over and over when he went to various places. So these are words that are absolutely true. Notice that she did not say he'll be raised up when Jerusalem is destroyed, as some are teaching erroneously, but she associated it with the last day. Jesus now makes his fifth I am statement in the book of John. He says, I am the resurrection and the life. I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in Jesus shall never die. Let's go ahead and read that verse. We left off with verse 22. Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. And Martha said to him, I know that he will rise in the resurrection at the last day. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me, though he may die, he shall live. And whoever lives and believes in me shall never die. Do you believe this? She said to him, yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who has come into the world. Notice what that means. When people die, their body begins to decay, but they are still alive. They are still alive. This is what Jesus had reference to when he was talking to the Sadducees, and they wanted to know whose wife this woman would be in the resurrection. And he said, you do err, not knowing the scriptures nor the power of God, that people do not marry and are not given in marriage in the resurrection. But, and all of this is in Matthew 22, 23 through 33. But here's what you're missing, he told the Sadducees. God said, I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He is not the God of the dead, but the living. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were alive, not their bodies, but their spirits. They were alive. They were not asleep. They were not unconscious. They were alive. I am their God. And Jesus is saying the same thing here. If you believe in me, you shall never die. You are going to be spiritually conscious. I will still have a relationship to you when you depart with you when you depart from this earth, just as God did with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So Martha concedes. She knows. She makes the same confession that Peter did. You are the Christ, the Son of God. She acknowledges him as the Messiah. She acknowledges him as the Christ, the Greek form of Messiah. She acknowledges him as the Son of God. Apparently, Mary had not heard that Jesus was there. So Martha goes and tells her privately. Let's pick up where we left off. In verse 28. And when she had said these things, she went away, and secretly, there was a crowd of people there, she secretly called Mary, her sister, saying, the teacher has come and is calling for you. As soon as she heard that, she arose quickly and came to him. Now Jesus had not yet come into town, but was in the place where Martha met him. And then the Jews who were with her in the house and comforting her, when they saw Mary rose up quickly and went out, followed her, saying, she is going to the tomb to weep there. And then when Mary came where Jesus was and saw him, she fell down at his feet, saying to him, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. So this gets us all out, Mary, Martha, and Jesus, all out to the same place. They're not going to be a long way off from the tomb, but now they are all three together. And she fell at his feet. You know, there is an earlier time when Mary and Martha were together in a house, and Martha was serving the meal, and Mary was not helping. And she said to Jesus, why don't you tell my sister to help me? Why was she not helping? Because she was sitting at the feet of Jesus, listening to him teach. Now, on this sad occasion, she comes out and falls again at Jesus' feet. Her heart was breaking, and she is back in front of her Lord. Not this time for teaching, but for consolation. Let's pick up with verse 33. Therefore, when Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews came with her weeping, he groaned in his spirit and was troubled. And he said, where have you laid him? And they said to him, come, Lord, come and see. Jesus wept. Then the Jews said, see how he loved him. Some of them said, could not this man who opened the eyes of the blind also have kept this man from dying? Now there's a few things about all of this that we want to notice. First of all, Jesus groaned in his spirit. One Greek expert said that the phrase literally means to snort with indignation, indicating displeasure. The displeasure here may be with death, which brought such sorrow to people. For rich or poor, famous or unknown, prominent or without influence, death comes to all. The tough thing is that it comes to good people as well as to evil people. Jesus was going to overcome it all for us and prove that we have nothing to fear by being resurrected from the dead himself. But that's not happened yet. It's something that's going to happen before too much more time elapses. But he mourns over what brings it about, and that is sin. Sin causes all of these things to occur. Sin is responsible for physical death, and we all chose to sin. So the fault is ours. But nevertheless, because of sin and because it causes all this to happen, it's a sad thing. It's sad that we made that choice and are in need of salvation. The good news is that salvation is available, though. But the sad thing is what sin causes and the consequences that it brings with it. We will all face the consequence of sin, death, but we can face it rejoicing in the hope that we have, or we can face it with fear, knowing that our sins are not forgiven. But it will happen to us, even if we have repented. We don't escape physical death, but we can escape spiritual death. Jesus asks where Lazarus was, and they took him to the tomb. Now, everybody knows that John 11:35 is the shortest verse in the Bible. Everybody, even little kids, know that. Jesus wept, John 11:35. But why did he weep? He knew what he was about to do. He had said earlier that he was going there to wake him, did he not? And so we know that he is about to raise him from the dead, so why is he weeping? He is weeping so that we will know that heaven cares and sorrows with our sorrows that we experience. Jesus has suffered in all points like as we are, yet without sin. And he is therefore capable of being our high priest because he knows. He knows what we feel. He knows what we experience. He wept himself on this occasion. But there are some enemies there. Verse 37 is not a thoughtful, innocent comment. It was malicious and contemptuous. They were trying to make Jesus look bad, but since they brought it up, it would serve to heighten the miracle that Jesus did. Yes, they meant it in a mean way. He could have stopped this. He has all this alleged power. He could have prevented it from happening. But they were not thinking in terms of glory. They were thinking in terms of, he didn't do it, so maybe we got him here. That's the kind of mentality that they had. Well, let's look at verses 38 through 44. Then Jesus, again groaning in himself, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone lay against it. And Jesus said, "Take away the stone." Martha, the sister of him who was dead, said to him, "Lord, by this time there's a stench, for he'd been dead 4 days." Jesus said to her, "Did I not say to you, if you would believe, you would see the glory of God?" Then they took away the stone from the place where the dead man was lying. And Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, "Father, I thank you that you have heard me, and I know that you always hear me. But because of the people who are standing by, I said this, that they might believe that you sent me." And now when he had said these things, he cried with a loud voice, "Lazarus, come forth!" And he who had died came out, bound hand and foot with grave clothes, and his face was wrapped with a cloth. Jesus said to them, "Loose him and let him go." When Jesus commanded the men to roll away the stone, don't you imagine people were shocked? Martha, a very pragmatic woman, protested that decomposition would have already begun, which is exactly the reason Jesus waited 4 days before he got there. Everyone knew he was dead. Nobody raises up from the dead after 4 days. No so-called faith healer has ever done that. I doubt that they've ever raised anybody who'd been dead 4 minutes, let alone 4 days. But this is a period of time that is more than sufficient, and people knew that Lazarus had died, had been wrapped up, and put into the tomb. There is not a person there who could conceive that he might possibly still be alive. But the glory of God is about to be seen. The purpose of this miracle was to produce faith. That's what the text says in verse 42. That's the purpose for it, and to glorify God. When Jesus commanded, "Lazarus, come forth," do you suppose anybody was looking the other direction? I think everybody's eyes turning. Lazarus, come forth. What is going to happen? So they took the stone away, and Lazarus came forth. I'm not sure how, because he couldn't see. He had the cloth on his head, and his feet were bound together. So did he just kind of skim along the ground? Jesus commanded it, and it happened. We don't know all of the details concerning that, but the sisters now had their brother back. One observation we might notice is that there's not anything said in the text about what he experienced while he was physically dead. Now, today he would have written a book and had a book deal within 5 minutes of being raised from the dead. Tell everybody what you saw. How was it? What was it like? Everybody would want to know that. They probably wanted to know it then. But if Lazarus answered those questions, they're not recorded, are they? Was he taken to Abraham's bosom like the other Lazarus? No details are mentioned. Well, let's conclude with a few key thoughts. Number one, this involves real people and is a real event. Lazarus actually died and was buried. Both the first miracle of Jesus and the last one involved families, one at a wedding, one at a funeral. God was present at both. God, in the form of Jesus, was present at both. He turned the water into wine at the wedding feast. And here, he caused Lazarus to be raised from the dead. Four, only the body perishes. The spirit remains alive. The spirit remains alive. Number five, sin is the cause of death. Yes, it is heartbreaking. Yes, it is sorrowful. But it is not God's fault. It's our fault. We chose to sin. God gave a commandment to prevent it from happening, but we chose to ignore that. So we have no one to blame except ourselves. Still, it is heartbreaking that it occurs, and God cares deeply about our sorrows. Jesus wept. Gratefully, Jesus is also the resurrection. I am the resurrection and the life. That sorrowful event is not the end, but bodies shall be raised, as we looked at from John 5:28 and 29. On the last day, Everyone shall be brought back and raised up and bodies changed and to stand before the throne of God and to either hear the awful words spoken, depart from me, ye that work iniquity, or to hear the glorious words, enter thou into the joys of thy Lord, good and faithful servant. Which one are you? The answer and what you receive on the day of judgment depends on which type of individual you are. Jesus weeps when we weep, but he rejoices when we rejoice. And the greatest rejoicing will be on that day when the faithful shall be invited into heaven and so ever be with God. If you are not prepared for that day and you know what you need to do to become prepared, we invite you to repent of your sins, confess Jesus as the Son of God, and be buried with him in baptism. And then live faithfully, just as John 10, 27 through 29 tells us, with the condition that we follow him. If you're already a Christian, there's still a question to deal with. Have you been faithful? If you need to make a change in your life this morning, we invite you to do so while we stand and while we sing.